The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Okay. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Yeah. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Oh, once she grabs, she won't let go. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. None of that soft stuff. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. None of that heavy metal stuff. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Just a little bit of jazz. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole.
What do you think?
Just I like love that. It.
The, you know, the weekend is here, right? Oh, what? Oh, I got my music. I got the background. Okay, got no. I have a lot of different inputs coming right now. Okay, think it's all fixed. One day, I'm going to get through a whole show without a technical screw up. It's just, it'll happen one of these days. John Doe, you love that intro? That is also Chris Isaak. You know, the all dressed in leather, you can't forget her. That's Chris Isaak. This is Chris from a different appearance. You know, and I can't play those things on the show because YouTube will copyright violate me. So there is a way, though, to hear a lot of those interviews. Let me just tell you what I'm doing. One of the many projects that I've embarked on is that, you know, there's this internet archive. In case you weren't aware of it, you should be, because you can go down that rabbit hole and get lost for days because people are uploading all kinds of stuff in there. So I was able to create a collection on there. Now, once you get 50 segments uploaded, they let you create a collection. So I created a collection from the KSCA Music Hall where we hosted all these amazing artist interviews. So I loaded 50, I got the collection set up, and then I haven't uploaded anything since. But I will, because we've got a few hundred of them. The radio station was on the air for 2.5 years, and we hosted everyone from Chris Isaak to Joni Mitchell to Gene Autry to Leon Russell to Elvis Costello to Lyle Love. I mean, I could go on and on, Jackson Browne. So I was able to get a hold of those tapes years after the station went off the air, and I wanted to be able to share them. I'm not looking to make money off them, but just to get them out there because it was such an amazing time in radio. That radio station was something really special. So if you go to, archive.org, I think. Hold on. I'll tell you exactly how to get there. Shoot, I used to have it bookmarked on here, and now I can't find it. I know the Wayback Machine. I think it's archived. Hold on. Now I'm going to pull it up because it's bugging me that I'm telling you to do something. And yes, it's archive.org. Archive.org is all you need. The Wayback Machine portion of it has screenshots of radio stations, of websites going back to the beginning. And if you look for KSCA.com, you got to go all the way back to the beginning, and our station was on there. But then if you look under audio, you click on audio and you go in the search box, and you can search for my name or you can search for KSCA, and you'll come up with that collection. And I'm telling you, if you're bored over the weekend, go in there and explore. I'm telling you, you will get lost for hours and hours and hours. You can. And there's a bunch of my stuff there, and there will be more, you know, when I get some time to upload them all. But it's a work in progress. So, hi. Welcome to a Friday. You know, I woke up this morning and I thought, today's going to be a good day. It's Friday. Yeah. And, well, then the news broke. I first saw it online at about 6:15 this morning. Kyrsten Sinema, or, you know, as I like to call her, Miss Enema, is proving who she is, even though we already knew. We knew the woman was not a Democrat. And finally, she proved it today. Apparently, she sat for an interview with Jake Tapper at CNN. I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before, but I guess they sat on it until today when the news broke that she's going independent. Oh, because she's so independent-minded. Kyrsten Sinema. Oh, please. Here's a little bit of her conversation with Jake Tapper.
You're here to make a significant announcement.
I've registered as an Arizona independent. I know some people might be a little bit surprised by this.
No.
Actually, I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, of course you do.
A number of Arizonans and people like me just don't feel like we fit neatly into one party's box or the other. And so, like many across the state and the nation, I've decided to leave that partisan process.
Yeah, you leave.
Really just focus on the work that I think matters to Arizona and to our country, which is solving problems and getting things done.
Mm-hmm.
So your voting record is pretty capital D Democratic. I mean, your views are generally that of a moderate centrist Democrat.
A conservadem, as I like to call her.
Change how you do your job.
Well, I don't think anything will change about how I do my job. Arizonans sent me to the United States Senate to be an independent
because you
voice
misled them
for our state.
Because you misled them.
What I think is important about this decision and this move is that I'll be able to show up to work every day as an independent.
Oh, fuck
and
you.
Not be,
oh, come on.
You know, stuck into one party's demands of following without thinking.
I see.
And as we've seen in recent years, both parties have created this kind of requirement or a pull towards the edges that you just unthinkingly support all of one party's viewpoints. It's made it difficult to find folks who are willing to work together and solve problems. Now,
yeah, because
you know,
you're a problem solver.
We've been able to
please
do a lot of bipartisan work over the last couple of years, and I'm incredibly proud
please
of that.
Please, please, please.
And I think it's important for folks across my state and frankly across the country to say, yep, there's someone that's kind of like me. Doesn't fit neatly into
she's
one
just
the
like
other,
you.
Is standing up
she
for
dresses
behind.
Like a 12-year-old in Catholic school.
Out.
And, but with cleavage showing.
Over on the other party or
just like you.
The other guy.
Just like you.
So let's talk about practically what this means.
Yeah,
because
practically,
you're
what
the
does
chair
it mean
of at least two subcommittees. You're a member of a number of important committees, including Veterans Affairs. Does this mean that you're no longer going to be in those positions because you're no longer a Democrat and the Democrats control
be
the Senate?
Well, I intend to maintain my position on my committees and keep doing the work that I've been doing for Arizona. So I don't think that things will change in terms of how I operate or the work that I do.
No,
in the
you'll
United
still
States
take
Senate
money from
so
big pharma,
ever since,
big
oil.
Warnock,
Senator Warnock was reelected earlier this week. The balance of power right now is 51 Democrats or 51 votes for the Democratic Party. That includes two independents, Angus King of Maine and Bernie Sanders of Vermont. But that's 51-49. What you're doing today doesn't change that. It's still basically going to be 51-49.
Well, I know you have to ask that question, Jake.
Yeah.
But that's kind of a D.C. thing to worry.
Oh, she is such a damn liar. That's kind of a D.C. thing. You live there. You live that culture. You take the money. She doesn't want to be primaried. She knows she's going to be primaried. I think she's not going to run because she knows she'll lose, and she's setting herself up to bring in the big bucks as a lobbyist. I'm not going to play the rest of it. Don't worry. I will make it stop. But, hey, Kyrsten, got a little song for ya.
Fuck you. Fuck you very, very much.
Okay, we need a palate cleanser. Lisa Graves is going to be here in a little while. Will she be? She won't be primaried anymore because she's not a Democrat. She won't run as a Democrat if she runs for reelection, which I don't think she's going to. I think she's going to go for the money and just go straight to the lobby shop because you got to look at the trajectory of Miss Enema's career. She started as a green in the Arizona State Legislature. That's when she used to go on Keith Olbermann's show all the time. And I understand they were stooping. Nice little side thing there. So they were fucking. He finally gets rid of her, I'm guessing. She moves on, but she uses him to jump into the national spotlight, and she gets somehow elected to the U.S. Senate. And then all of a sudden, she's not so progressive anymore. Ugh, everything about her makes my skin crawl, including the way she dresses. Disrespectful, everything about her oozes disrespect. So, Miss Enema, go. Just leave now. Just become a lobbyist now. Ah, okay. Robert in Naples. Hi.
Hey, Nicole. Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow. I mean, like, nobody saw this coming. Nobody.
Oh, no. No. Oh, no. No, actually, I guess I should thank her because I thought she was going to say, I've become a Republican, because she is one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know. That's. I couldn't believe when I didn't read the word Republican after it. You
yeah.
know, like
yep.
independent.
Yeah, but
okay, you know what?
She wants to remain the power broker. She wants to stay in power. She doesn't want to give up her clout. So she's, it's horrible.
She's going to give up everything. You know why? Because I don't think we should even talk to her. You know what? If it doesn't mean anything, let her go.
Yeah.
You know, let her be a Republican. Who cares?
Well,
you know,
who cares?
We still got a record amount of judges through. Right?
Yeah, but no. Here's where we do care, and here's where she's saying fuck you, not only to the Democratic Party and to everyone who voted for her, but to the country as a whole. If she goes Republican, then it's split 50-50 again, and the Republicans can hold things up. If she stays, caucuses with the Democrats, she can call herself an independent, but she's still playing politics. And if the Democrats have 51 to the Republicans 49, then they also have a majority on the committees and can get things through where they've been held up before.
You know what, Merrick Garland needs to get off his ass and go get the Hollies out of court and get them out of there. Get them all, and maybe one of those states will have a Democratic governor or they'll have an election and a Democrat will take the seat.
Yeah, well.
Oh, but here's another thing. Here, I got some ideas for you, Nicole, real fast, real quick. Why don't the good people of Arizona sue this asshole? I mean, look, you know what? She took Democratic money to get elected. People knocked on doors for her, made phone calls for her. On her behalf, they didn't want her to become an independent. They wanted her to be a Democrat. The Democratic Party of Arizona should try, a recall election or just go out and sue her, ask for the money that they spent on her.
Yeah. I don't know.
Do something. Let her freaking get nervous every minute of the day. You know what?
Yeah. I don't think she will. Right. I just think she lives in her own little bubble somewhere. I don't know what world it is, but... I don't know what color the sky is there either. She just lives in her own animal world.
She's got a paycheck. You know who else started in the Green Party? Donald Trump.
Oh,
Donald
God.
Donald Trump, he put his foot in the water in 2000, and he was a Green Party candidate, and then he recognized that, eventually later I could just win it all over the Republicans, and I'll own that party.
I hear you. But
he started off in the Green Party. So this lady's a crazy broad.
That she is. All right.
Yeah, but you know what? All right, I'll let you go. Have a good weekend. Thank you for letting me in.
Thank you. Thank you for calling, Robert. It's good to hear from you. Bye. David, yes.
I'll be quick because I know you want to get to Lisa.
I want to hear Lisa too. Yes.
But at times like this, I think it's important that we pause for just a moment and thank the one and only Chucky Schmucky for forcing Miss Enema down the throat of the Democratic Party. Because if you recall, Howie has said how Chucky Schmucky was responsible for taking her and saying this must be the candidate for the Senate in Arizona.
Right. Yeah, because he does that. He decides who should be the candidate, who should be, who the Democrats are going to get behind. And he decided that was the perfect candidate to run in Arizona. Yeah. At least, I will say this, unlike the former guy shoving Herschel Walker down the throats of the Republicans, at least she won doesn't mean, I don't know. I say good riddance and I hope she leaves. All right. So let's get on with the meat of the show, because I don't want to talk about Miss Enema anymore. I do want to talk about what happened this week in the Supreme Court, which is a topic that I honestly haven't gotten to, because I knew that we would be joined today by Lisa Graves. Lisa Graves, you can currently find at True North Research, truenorthresearch.org, where she's the founder, executive director, editor-in-chief, and chief cook and bottle washer or something. And but Lisa has done so much work for us, and she knows the legal system because she was the assistant attorney general. Deputy assistant attorney general under John Ashcroft and Janet Reno.
That's right. Deputy Assistant Attorney General under both Ms. Reno and Mr. Ashcroft.
Okay. I knew it was something like that. Yeah. Your credentials are, you know, unbelievable. And when you join me here to talk about things legal and give your opinion on stuff, you're just as Lisa Graves, not as the director of True North Research. You're doing this on your own not representing your organization, so that, you know, you're speaking for yourself.
That's right. I am speaking for myself as a private citizen, based on what I'm observing, Nicole, and it's always a joy to be able to have a candid conversation with you about my personal views about these very significant matters that we're facing as a country.
And it's so great to have you here. I got to tell you, you've got a lot of fans, because every time I say Lisa's coming up, the chat room gets excited too, because we love hearing from you. So thank you for joining us today. So the court that I call the extreme court now, because they really are, it's so depressing, they heard two big cases this week that could change things again in a big way for a lot of people in this country. The first one on Monday was a case. Is this sort of a continuation of the Colorado case from a few years ago with the baker who didn't want to have to make a wedding cake for a gay couple?
Yes, it is. This is more litigation backed by some of the same right-wing groups and the same secretive funders, presumably, who have a very anti-gay agenda. And it's actually extraordinary that the court is accepting this case, because it's actually the type of case that any other court would have rejected out of hand, because it's about the posture is that it's someone who might possibly have a website that might possibly want to discriminate against gay couples. Right. And so usually the court doesn't take cases that are not actual current controversies that involve actually current activities, where you have a factual record, where you can see who the actors are, who's harmed by it. This is what would ordinarily be called an advisory opinion, which the court typically does not give, the Supreme Court and other courts. They're not in the business of advisory opinions, where they basically say, theoretically, something might happen, and so we're going to issue a whole rule about something that hasn't happened yet and might not ever happen. This literally is a case brought by someone who says that they may someday, maybe, right, might have a website that, and through that website and the services they offer, they might not want to provide any services to gay and lesbian GLBTQ Americans.
Right.
And they sort of want an advisory opinion that they can discriminate in the future.
That's the thing that's so jarring about this, is it's based on a hypothetical. This is a woman who does design websites, but she's never been at, she hasn't, she says she's thinking she would like to get into doing wedding websites, but she's afraid that some ungodly gay couple might come in and ask her to build one for them, and her religion goes against that. Oh, please. So she's asking the Supreme Court to give her the right to preemptively discriminate against a certain class of people in some future hypothetical business that may hypothetically be hypothetically come to her someday, but hasn't yet. Really? So how do they accept cases that four of the justices have to say, yeah, we'll look at this?
Well, so the Supreme Court, as you know, and your listeners know, has 9 members.
Right.
That's not set by the Constitution. No. That's just been a matter of practice for the last several decades. It doesn't have to be that way. It could be 15. That's what I think it should actually be.
Or personally, it could be 8, which it was for almost a year without them, saying it. But Mitch McConnell kept it at 8 for a year.
It could be 8, could be 7.
That's right.
There's no magic number. But
that's right.
Given it, but in a 9-person court, the practice has been that if 4 justices vote to hear a case, that the court will hear that case. Now, thinking about what that means in reality is, I'm going to cough for a second here. Sorry about that. What that means in reality is, this is a Supreme Court that in the year 2022, 2021, receives nearly 9,000 requests from people across the country and businesses and groups to hear cases that they feel that the lower court made a mistake that didn't rule in their favor. And they choose less than 1% of those cases. Under the U.S. Constitution, the Supreme Court has what's called original jurisdiction, or what would be mandatory jurisdiction, where one state sues another state. The court has to take that case. All the other cases are discretionary, meaning the bulk of this court's docket, and last year, 68 cases, they were all cases that this faction of the Supreme Court, this right-wing faction, chose to hear. And the reason why I say they chose the cases is because the conventional wisdom is that you only vote to take a case if you think you have a majority on that issue. You don't, like the progressive justices or people have been appointed by Democrats in that court, they're not taking cases, voting for cases necessarily where they think that the right wing is going to stick together in a block to destroy some precedent. So these are cases that you have to perceive as being handpicked, literally handpicked, by the right-wing justices on the court, the most far-right reactionary judges we've seen in a century on this court. And they are choosing cases like this case that we've been discussing, Nicole, where it's not even properly before the court because there's not an actual current injury. And it's all theoretical. And also, it's designed to basically advance this personal religious agenda of some of these justices, where they seem to have no regard for the idea that they are appointed to this position to rule in a way that's fair for all the American people. They seem very determined to rule to advance a right-wing religious agenda, which believes they have a right to discriminate based on words that aren't even in the Bible.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And in fact, I would say, as someone who has studied, religious texts, including the Bible, over time, this is an area where it's particularly fraught to say that you have a right to discriminate based on what's in the Bible, because the Bible had a very elaborate system for slavery and how slaves were treated and how slaves were compensated if they were injured, or how the owner of a slave was compensated if they were injured. The Bible had been used historically, certainly in the 1800s in our country, as a basis for arguing that slavery was a God-given institution,
right.
That it was legitimate. And there are certainly people of faith who argued otherwise, who argued that, based on their beliefs, that the Bible did not mean that U.S. Slavery was preordained or natural.
Right.
But the fact is that you have this very pernicious argument where these right-wing religious groups are coming forward and saying that based on their reading of the Bible, they have a right to discriminate against people in the stream of commerce. And so just to put an underscore on this, in the 1960s, as the Civil Rights Act was being passed, as the Voting Rights Act was being passed, as rules against discrimination in housing, hotels, accommodations was being passed, there were people who said that they believed strongly they had a right to discriminate. And the United States Congress in those measures, as well as the United States Supreme Court, basically said you cannot use that in essence as the basis to discriminate. So you have this deep belief, you have racism as your belief, but that some of that racism was also by some of those people tied to their religious beliefs,
right?
Their segregationist beliefs, and so it's a very, very troubling road for this court to be trying to use. A construction of the First Amendment, our First Amendment, the right to be free from the establishment of religion, and for people to have free exercise of the religion, to say that those clauses somehow mean that there's an inherent right to discriminate. And that's exactly what the court has held in the Hobby Lobby case and the master, you know, in the baking case from California, from Colorado.
Right.
They basically asserted that people have a right to discriminate based on religious beliefs that may or may not be tied to any actual provision that, you know, commands such a result in the Bible. And that they can override anti-discrimination laws. So it really is extraordinary.
It is extraordinary that they even heard this in the first place. But, you know, when you think about it, Lisa, if this woman, her name is Lori Smith, to put a name to the person, because there was an actual human being who did this, who brought this case, obviously, with some prodding from the Republican Party, I'm sure. If she was doing, you know, someone asked her to do a website for their wedding, and there were people she didn't feel comfortable with, she could easily just say, you know what, I'm too busy, I don't have time to get you, and not do the job. You also, when you have a business, you reserve the right to refuse service to anybody. But they want the okay to legally discriminate against LGBTQ people. That's what this is about. Right?
Right. You can't refuse business on a discriminatory basis.
Not,
you can
right.
refuse because you're too full, you're too busy,
exactly.
You know, you the person is disruptive and, you know, is destroying the lobby of the hotel or whatever. Like, that's the case, but not based on animus, not based on, you know, discriminatory intent. And, you know, the extraordinary thing that is sort of this whole host of cases, including the case that the New York Times reported that Samuel Alito was giving a heads up to these evangelical communities and leaders in the Hobby Lobby case.
Yes.
You know, there you had a case where a corporation was asserting that the corporation had a religious belief, which is not actually a thing. Maybe, you know, a church does, but even then it's a corporation. It's not, you know, it's people have beliefs. In that case, Hobby Lobby asserted that it had a belief in, against abortion and against, you know, even having IUDs,
right.
So that they're the women who work at Hobby Lobby stores could not use the insurance to get access, not just to an abortion, but to a commonly prescribed
right?
control device. And they said that they had a religious belief that sort of mandated that. Now, this is a company that then was subsequently fined for stealing thousands and thousands of artifacts from the Middle East. And this is a family held small company, and they were securing the artifacts for that family,
for
their personal religious like agenda. And, you know, I am not a student of all things in the Bible in terms of, like, certainly couldn't answer a question about what's on every single page. But I do know that there's an express provision, not about IUDs or access to birth control, but an express provision about thou shalt not steal.
Yeah.
But apparently that provision of the Bible was non-binding to this corporation's religious beliefs, just the provision that would allow them to bar their the people who work for them from getting access to normally prescribed access to medical care for reproductive care. And so fast forward to this case, where you now have someone who is asserting in their web design business that they somehow have some, you know, religious basis for discriminating against future prospective clients of a future prospective service that they don't even provide. And so it just shows how activist this faction on the court is, how extreme they are, and how willing they are to bend or break the normal rules about our courts and about judicial decisions in order to try to intervene to aid this far right extreme agenda.
It's just astounding. It's mind-boggling. But this is where we are now. This is the makeup of this court. And so why I call them the extreme court. But so we have three amazing women sitting on the court. You got Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, and Ketanji Brown Jackson. And I heard some of the questions. In fact, maybe I can play some. But that, you know, they're doing all they can. But you've got Alito, who was, I think, the only word I can use to describe his line of questioning and reasoning was horribly offensive, you know, horribly offensive when he talked about a mall Santa and a you know, not willing to take a picture with a black kid in a KKK costume or something. I'm just like, what the heck? And he's laughing about it. Where did that even come from?
Well, I think Alito is seriously off his rocker. I hate to say it because, you know, I'm certainly not in a position to diagnose someone's mental capacity,
right.
But no reasonable judge, certainly not a judge on the highest court in the country, would think that it's okay to make such a ridiculous and offensive joke during the actual oral argument of a very serious matter. And for him to think that this is okay and that he's just so funny that he can make such a horrifying joking example right. in this case, it's actually horrifying. Yep. And
you know what? In fact,
I wish you could say I was surprised.
Right. For those who maybe didn't hear it, let's just take a listen. Again, this is Samuel Alito, extreme court justice, I think. Come on. And it doesn't want to play. Okay, hold on. I'll play it this way. I've got my gremlins are just miserable this week. I don't know what it is, but we can do it this way.
There's a black Santa at the other end of the mall, and he doesn't want to have his picture taken with a child who's dressed up in a Ku Klux Klan outfit. That black Santa has to do that.
No, because Ku Klux Klan outfits are not protected characteristics under public accommodation laws.
And presumably that would be the same Ku Klux Klan outfit, regardless whether the child was black or white or any other characteristic.
Yeah, you do see a lot of black children in Ku Klux Klan outfits, right? All the time.
That was funny. You know, I think that was Sonia Sotomayor who chimed in with the second part of that question. And he thought that was hysterical. And then he goes to, maybe it was Elena Kagan, because he follows
up. An unmarried Jewish person asks a Jewish photographer to take a photograph for his J-Date dating profile. Is it a dating service, I gather, for Jewish people?
It is.
And I don't know why that's funny.
All right. Maybe Justice Kagan will also be familiar with the next website I'm going to mention. So next, a Jewish person asks a Jewish photographer to take a photograph for his AshleyMadison.com dating profile. I'm not suggesting that. I mean, she knows a lot of things. I'm not suggesting. Okay. Does he have to do it?
Well, I mean, again, it would. What Colorado look? It depends. What Colorado looks to is what services the photographer makes available to the public. And if the photographer makes that service available to others taking pictures, you know, for use on websites, then probably yes. But it depends on.
Okay. Two things there. First of all, Ashley Madison is a website for, I guess, men who want to cheat. So it was just a weird thing for him to go to after the J-Date. And why do they have to be Jewish? I mean, the whole thing, everything that comes out of his mouth, I find offensive. Am I being overly sensitive?
I don't think you are. I mean, it is. I think it's objectively offensive. I think many people took a rightful offense. You know, he is behaving with such arrogance. He's behaving with such disregard for the impact of his words. And in fact, you know, you could see that in the decision that he wrote in Dobbs. That was basically written as if he were a member of the Wall Street Journal's really terrible editorial board that writes all sorts of, you know, screeds filled with hyperbole and disinformation. We don't expect that from a Supreme Court justice. We expect a justice, and we rightly expect justices to rule based on the law and the facts. And here you have someone who has, you know, injected his bile into our decisions that have ripped away the rights of millions of Americans to access constitutional reproductive care. And then also this past year, he was part of a decision where about school prayer, where basically they invented facts in like express defiance of what the factual evidence revealed and photographic evidence showed about a coach. You know, a coach who has coercive power because he's a coach, you know, conducting these prayers and conducting them not in, you know, a private setting, but in a very public setting, in a way where young people would inherently feel coerced if they, you know, to participate, even if they didn't share those views. And he ignored the facts and the law and tried to, and in fact, constructed a new, quote, standard to expand the injection of that sort of religious activism into our public schools, our public square. Then he went on a little applause tour to Rome and other places where he just bragged about, you know, his victories in these cases. You know, he's someone of privilege. who I don't know what his grievance is. This is a man who, you know, had the audacity at the State of the Union address to break all, you know, sort of prior protocols of the Supreme Court and mouth.
Not true, mouth back at
President Obama about the Affordable Care Act.
Yep.
He is someone who seems unhinged. He's someone who seems very willing to be injecting his personal views into our law and try to make it binding on the rest of us. He's someone who, it's been reported both in the New York Times and then in testimony yesterday before the House Judiciary Committee in a hearing chaired by Jerry Nadler, where Reverend Schenck, Mr. Schenck, testified under oath that Alito, that, you know, that they had a campaign to lobby the court, to influence the court to go further to the right, and that Alito had let them know that he was going to be writing the decision in the Hobby Lobby case that we discussed earlier. Yep. And that gave them 6 months to prepare for their PR campaign around that decision. And that Alito also, you know, was happy to be wined and dined and schmoozed and boozed in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, by the super rich far right people in this country.
Right. But you know what, Lisa, I want to go back to the thing. So we know, because Schenck told us, and it said it under oath yesterday, Alito informed the plaintiff, the Hobby Lobby people, that they were going to be winning the case that they argued before the Supreme Court. He told them 6 months before the decision was made public. And then let's go back to last year, or not even last year, but when the Dobbs opinion was leaked, and he spoke, he's like, whoever leaked it, we need to find this. And they cast aspersions on the liberal members of the court, saying it were, I have no doubt that Alito did this. I firmly believe he did. I have no proof, but I believe he did it because he's got a track record of doing it. And he is unhinged enough to do that. And he for whatever reason, he wanted it out there. The hypocrisy is stunning. I'm sure you're not going to. Well, what do you think about that?
Well, first of all, I think that Schenck's testimony was compelling. It was really appalling to see that the opposing witness was Mark Paoletti, who is a lawyer in Washington, who's most widely known for being like one of the shepherds for Clarence Thomas and Jenny Thomas. He's the one who, after Jenny said she'd appear before the committee, basically said, no, she might not, or only under these circumstances. He's someone who's helped flack for Thomas's so-called documentary biopic. Has flack for his books, you know, worked on his confirmation. He's a close personal friend of Jenny, who is, you know, embroiled in trying to subvert our democracy and stop the counting of the vote. And yet Thomas is continuing your cases that involve, you know, that subversion. But, you know, in that hearing, I thought Schenck was testified credibly, notwithstanding Mark Paoletti's attacks on that testimony, his efforts to claim that the Democrats were doing a disservice to the court by casting aspersions on it. That committee, the Judiciary Committee on the House, has a duty and an obligation to investigate what has come out, what's been told about this influence campaign around this Supreme Court, and to investigate exactly what they were doing yesterday, which is how this how this was put together, what its goals were, and how it has manifested in our law. It's not just like a theoretical, like, right, circumstance, like the case involving the website designer. This is a real world circumstance where you have a sitting Supreme Court justice who, and the New York Times, before they ran that story, there was a description of what they did in that story to, you know, look at documentary evidence to see, like, is this just a guy bragging about, you know, some sort of relationship, or is there evidence to show that this in fact happened? And the New York Times, you know, revealed the evidence that indicated that that in fact had happened. And if you kind of pause and look back at the the situation, this is a situation where in the U.S. Supreme Court, when these nine justices hear an oral argument, then they gather behind closed doors and they take a straw poll vote to see how they're going to rule on a case. And then whoever's in the majority, the Chief Justice assigns, you know, who's going to write the opinion. So in that case, in the Hobby Lobby case, the Republican appointees were going to write the majority opinion. And Alito was assigned that opinion by Roberts. No one in the outside world knew that it was Roberts. It could have been you know, it could have been Thomas, it could have been Roberts himself, it could have been Kennedy. But it was Alito. Alito knew that it was Alito. The other judges did, but the outside world did not know that he was writing that opinion. But apparently the evangelical right wing money operation did know.
Of course.
And
they
was able to do some organizing to prepare for that ruling, which was groundbreaking. And as I mentioned, quite stunning to imbue this corporation that is, you know, sells hobby goods, you know, craft supplies, with some sort of conscience that allows it to have some sort of a right, sort of divine right to stop the women who work for it from getting access to normal healthcare from their OBGYNs or Planned Parenthood. And so that is it's still a stunning decision to this day. On the issue of the other leak, in May, the Dobbs leak. That's a situation where, like you said, the fact that there's evidence now that Alito basically tipped his hand ahead of time before, you know, why can't we assume that he did it this time?
That's right.
I mean, I think we could assume that, but we don't know. And it could have been, you know, it could have been from a Thomas or a Jenny Thomas, for example.
Right.
Given could've her interest in these issues. And you have a situation where there's, I would be completely shocked. I'm not sure. I'm not going to say I'd eat my scarf, but I would like seriously be shocked if there was any evidence that it was a progressive staffer, a clerk, or an administrative staffer who did that, because the whole point of that leak was to lock in that 5-person majority that took that straw poll to keep, apparently to keep Brett Kavanaugh from defecting to join Roberts in a concurring opinion that would have meant that they couldn't as overtly overrule Roe, that they were going to take the, like they, there wouldn't be 5 votes. There'd just be 4 votes for Alito's position, 2 for Roberts' position, and then 3 dissenters. And that would have meant that the Dobbs decision would have been bad, but it wouldn't have been as dramatic in overturning, you know, nearly 5 decades of legal precedent in the U.S. And so the purpose of that leak was, you know, seemingly to try to lock Kavanaugh in. And so it seems highly likely that it was someone aligned with Alito, which could have been Alito, or it could have been from the Thomas household. It could have been from a number of sources, but I would be shocked if it were from a progressive person. That would really shock me. But again, that's all speculation and we don't know. And all the people involved have denied, or theoretically involved have denied, or said have made no comment. But it's very troubling that you have a court that's leaking.
Yep.
It's very troubling of a court that's so prone to outside influence and distorting influence. It's very troubling that you have a court that has no ethical standards whatsoever. It's not bound by the code of conduct for U.S. judges, which binds all lower court federal judges, the district court and the circuit courts. It's not bound by any of the ethics codes that bind other courts in this country. It not only has, like, the Supreme Court of the United States of America should have the highest ethical standards, higher than Congress,
right?
Not the lowest standards, and in fact, not no standards.
Right. And so why is that not at the top of the agenda for the debt? What, now that it's public common knowledge, we all know this, and that they're showing they have no ethics, at least Alito and Thomas are, and we don't even have to get into Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, and Amy Coney Barrett, who all lied under oath in their confirmation hearings when they said, oh, Roe is settled law, we're not going to overturn that. Each one of them said that. They lied under oath. And why is there not a great outcry saying this is an illegitimate court?
Well, I think this court is illegitimate. It's both illegitimate in how it was constituted, this blocking of Merrick Garland, his confirmation to save that seat for Gorsuch, the pushing through of Amy Coney Barrett just a few weeks before the 2020 election, while people were voting.
Already voting.
And Trump lost. So you have 2 members on that court in that 6-3 majority who shouldn't even be on that court. It should be a 5-4 court the other way right now. But now you have this 6-3 right wing cabal, in essence, or not cabal, but this faction that is in control of this court. And it's because the court was fixed. The court was packed and it needs to be unpacked. And also, I mean, they all gave slightly different statements about Roe in terms of it being settled precedent or binding precedent or what have you. But I think there's no doubt that some of them lied under oath. I can certainly count to 4, if not 5, of them lying under oath about that and other matters. I certainly presented evidence about Brett Kavanaugh's lying under oath about the materials that were stolen from the Senate Judiciary Committee and provided to him, that were in his emails that were obtained by the Senate Judiciary Committee during his confirmation, showing that he received communications that were my communications, my actual communications, as well as other materials that were stolen from the Senate Judiciary Committee by a right-wing staffer.
Wow.
And so, you know, I think there's ample grounds for whether these justices illegitimately obtained their position. I think there's ample ground for concern whether they're under the Article 3 provision of the Constitution, whether they're serving their tenure with good behavior.
Uh-huh.
The fact that Thomas has refused to recuse, has intervened, for example, in that Georgia case on the same in that sort of in a way that would help his wife's general position, and certainly expressly tried to rule in favor of not having Trump be required to release communications from the White House that certainly implicate her. I think he is not serving with good behavior. And I think there should be provisions that allow him to be removed from office because he has proven himself to be unworthy of this position of public trust. But that doesn't even get to the other case that was heard this week.
Right.
Nicole, I know you've got a little more time left.
Right.
I think the court is in crisis. I think this court is behaving in ways that are deeply illegitimate and are destructive of our democracy and destructive of our rights, and deliberately so.
Without a doubt. And yes, so there was the second case, the one they heard on Wednesday, which, if I understand it correctly, would basically give the group that wanted to put in the fake electors and overturn the last election exactly what they want by an end run around our electoral rules. Moore versus Harper was the case they heard on Wednesday, and it's about a North Carolina redistricting, but they're trying to push something called the ISL theory, the independent state legislature. So what would happen if this goes through? And this one, it seems like there may be more of a split, that they may not go full bore into it, but then again, they might.
This is a crazy theory. I mean, this is a ridiculous, laugh out loud, absurd theory in America to be considered by this court. Again, it's sort of a different version of why is the court taking this case. This is a case where you have a fringe theory whose most prominent proponent was John Eastman, who has been utterly discredited for his role in trying to subvert our democracy and trying to convince Trump to not get these votes, to stop the counting of the votes. And he pursued some of this theory in the litigation around the 2020 election, where you had in the middle of the pandemic, before there were vaccines readily available, some people were able to get vaccinated, but I don't think by 2020 they even had the vaccine.
No.
As that election was unfolding, millions of Americans were very fearful of being in public spaces close next to other people, breathing in potentially contaminated air based on this the way this disease is transmitted. And there were efforts to make sure that people could vote by mail, that they could vote, safely vote absentee. And there were decisions like the Pennsylvania Supreme Court that said, here's how we effectuate the freedom of vote in our state. The Supreme Court has the power to make sure that people's right to vote is protected. And they're going to make sure that people had the chance to vote absentee with all the precautions that have always gone along with that in Pennsylvania. And the Trump team opposed that. And they argued that only the state legislature has any power to issue any rules regarding the elections. And that's what this theory is. It's this idea that in their fictionalized version of our Constitution, that of all the provisions and all the various parts of law in all of our Constitution and state constitutions, that in this one area involving voting rights and involving, in that case, redistricting, courts have no power, that legislatures have completely unchecked power. That is completely contrary to core principles. I don't care whether you're a Democrat, Republican, Green, Independent,
right,
non-dependent, whatever your party may or may not be. One of the fundamental components of U.S. democracy is supposed to be checks and balances. What they're trying to construct is this outrageous, assault on checks and balances by asserting that this one tiny clause in the Constitution that has never been read this way by a majority of the U.S. Supreme Court or any state Supreme Court, that somehow in this area, this one area that's vital to our democracy, vital to what I would say, you know, under the Declaration of Independence, it's like the right to pursue life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness,
right?
Because government is made possible by the consent of the governed. You know, how do you get legitimate consent of the governed if these legislatures can just basically create their own rules without check?
Right.
You cannot have legitimate consent of the governed. And so Neil Katyal argued against the legislature in North Carolina and argued very eloquently. You can hear his argument on the Supreme Court's website for that hearing. But what he said was, if the court were to rule this way, if this faction, in essence, were to rule this way, they would be destroying, you know, two centuries of law, centuries of law in the United States, and recent precedents. A few years ago, the Roberts Court issued a decision in Rucho versus Common Cause that involved a challenge to redistricting or map drawing. In that case, Justice Kennedy wrote an opinion on behalf of a majority of the court that said that federal courts could not be involved in this particular type of redistricting in a state. But in that opinion, that is the majority opinion that is still the majority opinion precedent law in the United States, he said, but of course, this doesn't leave the plaintiffs without a remedy. This doesn't leave the party. They can still pursue these cases under the state constitution and have a ruling by the state Supreme Court. That's what the case says. Just a few years ago, before Amy Coney Barrett was on the court, before Kavanaugh was confirmed, despite evidence that he attempted to sexually assault Christine Blasey Ford,
right,
and lied under oath, before Gorsuch was installed in place of Merrick Garland, the court ruled that, of course, a state court, some court, would have the chance to have a check and balance on legislatures. And so it is truly a dangerous argument that's being made by these right wingers. It's the John Eastman argument. They try to hinge it a little bit on an opinion that was not the majority opinion written by Rehnquist, like during Bush versus Gore, during that Palm Beach County case.
Yes.
But it has never been the majority rule in the United States. And it would allow, as you mentioned, Nicole, it would create a situation in which a state legislature could set aside the vote of the people, not just in this redistricting area, but like could set aside the vote of the people based on its some sort of notion, like these right wingers were saying in Arizona, that there's bamboo flakes or something.
Whatever, nonsense.
Were part of ballots. Like any basis that they want, and that a state Supreme Court would be powerless to enforce people's right to vote because the legislature is like a king in this conception and has no limits, no ability. Now, the lawyer in that case at the oral argument, the right-wing lawyer, tried to claim, well, there's some distinction between procedural and substantive. It was all a bunch of gobbledygook. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson and others said, you know, the lines you're trying to draw here don't make any sense. And as you mentioned, Nicole, there seemed like there was possibly some skepticism by some of the right-wing justices. But that's also because this is an unhinged theory that even the current co-chair of the Federal Society and the co-founder of the Federal Society has written a brief saying this is this is ahistorical, atextual, contrary to our system of checks and balances. And he's been joined by another very prominent Republican appointee, Judge Michael Luttig, who spoke eloquently about the threat Trump poses to our democracy, that this theory is an outlandish, offensive assault, end run around our democratic processes. And in fact, you know, in my view and the view of many others, it could allow these right wingers to basically subvert our democracy in 2024 in the presidential election.
Exactly. And yet four of the justices said, yeah, this is a case we need to hear.
Yeah.
That's astounding.
They chose that case. They chose to hear that case. And I think that just shows how out of step this right-wing faction that Mitch McConnell helped get installed with the help of Leonard Leo and his dark money operation, which we now know is tied to a Chicago industrialist named Barry Side, who gave Leo subsequently, you know, $1.5 billion to be involved in remaking our laws. Leo picked the people that Trump chose from for the Supreme Court. He's helped to backstop some of the groups that have brought litigation to the Supreme Court. These cases like this are part of his agenda. And in fact, just this past week, a week or so ago, he tried to get that Federal Society co-chair barred from using the fact that he was a Federal Society co-chair and co-founder because he took issued an amicus brief on the opposite side, I guess, of where Leonard Leo wants this court to go. It's really extraordinary when you have this internecine fight in the Federal Society over this issue, but it just shows how baseless and crackpot this theory is and how dangerous it is.
It is frightening. And this court is scary. So you've got Thomas, you've got Alito, you've got the other three. Roberts, when he was made Chief Justice, when he was nominated by W, we're thinking, oh, God, this guy, he's the least worst of the bunch. We're looking, and Joe Biden says he's against enlarging increasing the number of justices on the bench. Is there any other way to do anything? Can we impeach any of them, or would that it wouldn't work? Would it?
Well, you have to have the House a House vote to impeach them. So not in the next 2 years could any of them be impeached. It's possible. It would be possible, perhaps this year before the end of this Congress, to pass a measure that puts term limits on some of these justices. That would be possible. There's an effort to put ethics, you know, requirements on these justices, but these justices may claim that would violate their, you know, the separation of powers, and that Congress can't impose an ethical rule on them, and that Roberts doesn't have the votes with that right-wing faction that's, you know, just ever so to the right of him, but, you know, he's definitely a right-winger himself.
Yep.
May not have the votes to even have a self-imposed ethical requirement where the people would have a right to know who people like Jenny Thomas are getting paid by. Who
right.
was paying her?
And now,
who were her clients as she was calling Mark Meadows? Who were her clients? We know from Jane Mayer's reporting earlier this year that at least one of her clients has had active litigation before the Supreme Court. I'm sure there are more of them.
And now, right. And now this other thing. So they put this provision into the NDAA. And Jane Mayer tweeted yesterday morning, lawmakers have just added a provision to the National Defense Authorization Act protecting Supreme Court spouses from having to reveal any outside employer in the name of security. If it passes, she wrote, Jenny Thomas's professional entanglements would effectively be state secrets. Now, Lawrence Tribe disagreed with her, and he came back and said, that's not true. You're overlooking the exceptions on pages 2557, lines 5 through 21, to prevent precisely such unintended consequences. And he says Part 3 exempts covered information lawfully received from an employee of the federal government, and Part 1 exempts information on a matter of public concern. To me, that's the gobbledygook. Why is this provision inserted into the NDAA?
I think it should be struck. And, you know, I certainly respect both Jane and Professor Tribe. I think that there's a lot of good intention in his rebuttal, but I don't believe it'll be enforced that way. And
no.
We clearly have a situation where we have Justice Thomas's spouse, we have Amy Coney Barrett's spouse, our clients are. The people do not know. They have a right to know. And for all the justices, it doesn't matter, you know, whether they didn't do it before, whether they didn't get Justice Ginsburg's spouse's clients. This is the Supreme Court of the United States. It should be beyond and above reproach. And that means that the people who are married to those justices, they may not get to make as much money as they want because they're married to a Supreme Court justice.
Exactly.
And they all the cases they want because they're married to a Supreme Court justice. And if they take a client or they get a consulting agreement, they should have to reveal to the American people who is paying them, who is feathering their nest, and also who's paying for their travel, who's underwriting these fabulous vacations to the millionaires of Jackson Hole and the like.
That's
so
right.
We have a huge problem with this court. the stench of manipulation and corruption and lack of regard for precedent is very strong. And this it's been targeted by this dark money machine of Leonard Leo to capture. And in his words, which he told at the Council on National Policy in 2019, because he thinks that the court is on the cusp of what he described as a revival of the so-called structural constitution to basically change our laws back to a period before the New Deal. He said no one in that room, of some very old people in that room at CNP, had seen the kind of revolution that was about to unfold by this court that he helped pack. He didn't say he helped pack it. He claimed it was all Trump's choice. Yeah.
Right.
But they have a vision for turning us back to the robber baron era, to this what was known in the legal world as this Lochner era, where courts were basically putting their thumb on the scale of justice in favor of the richest few in America and against the rights and interests of the American people. And we've got to say no. In fact, I think we've got to say hell no.
Hell no. Hell
and
no.
Organize against it until we prevail.
Absolutely. And Lisa, I got to say, you are here as an individual just giving your opinions. But Leonard Leo is somebody that you've exposed in your work with True North Research, just like you told us about the Koch brothers and Alec
and all of
those bad actors. This is the kind of work that you're doing, that you did in your last organization, and you're doing at True North Research. I want to give you some credit there, because you are telling us who these people are and who we need to pay attention to. And I thank you for that. So people should check out truenorthresearch.org and read the work that they're doing there, because you guys are doing amazing work.
Oh, well, thank you so much for the team. You know, I'm speaking only for myself right now.
Yes.
But I really appreciate that. We do a lot of work to try to uncloak some of these dark money operations that are distorting our law and distorting our democracy. And it's not just about our democracy. It's about the freedoms that we hold dear that are being eroded and attacked. Because this dark money is so predominant in our political system, predominantly on the right, in terms of this extreme agenda that they are trying to impose on us as a matter of law. I can't imagine anything more arrogant than trying to make someone else comport with your own personal religious beliefs.
No.
You know, it goes against the core American idea that, like, you get to believe what you want, but you don't get to, like, make other people follow your own personal religious beliefs. Everyone should have a freedom of conscience.
Of course, or freedom from it. You know,
yeah.
During the campaign, I had Charlie Crist on the show once, and he was, God bless and this and that. And finally, I said, or not, you know, Charlie, he told me to call him Charlie. I said, you know, I appreciate that that's your belief, but there are many of us out here who don't have those beliefs. So,
and in fact, Nicole, as you know, the Constitution expressly provides a bar on any religious oath or test for office.
That's right.
Because the founding fathers, with their, you know, some of their genius and many of their flaws, nevertheless recognized how pernicious it would be if there were a religious test or oath for office, and that the adherence is supposed to be to the Constitution, not to one's own religious institution or beliefs. And in fact, we're now living in an era in which the former guy, has affirmatively attacked the Constitution based on this, you know, really absurd fomenting over there at Twitter that supposedly he should just immediately be installed as president. Just a ridiculous sort of thing, which I don't want to get into too much here. But like to the idea that you have the immediate past president of the United States who, you know, orchestrated this assault on the Capitol, this effort to subvert our democracy, incited this violence, wanted to go march into the Capitol with his troops of people marauding and trying to stop Pence from counting those ballots by whatever means necessary. And then a year later, you know, after the impeachment, where there was a majority of senators who wanted to impeach, but not a supermajority required on the Constitution, where you had people like Susan Collins in the prior impeachment saying, oh, she thought that Trump had learned his lesson. Yeah, the lesson he learned was that he can get away with it with
That's
these
right.
Republicans. And so here we are in the end of 2022 with a former president saying that the Articles of the Constitution be thrown out so that he can be installed illegitimately as president of the United States. it's, dictatorship.
It's astounding. So I know we're going over time. I hope you do have a few more minutes, because I do want to ask you, Lisa Graves, I asked you to come on and talk about these things, and you said, and we can also talk about the criminal referrals to the Justice Department from the January 6th Commission, which we understand it's looking like December 21st is the date when they're going to have their last public hearing where they release their findings and vote on criminal referrals. So should they or shouldn't they?
I think they absolutely should. And I know that there's some people who say that that's somehow political. I disagree with that respectfully, because the committee has already been smeared as partisan, even though it's bipartisan. And in fact, it has the only two Republicans willing to take their oath to defend the Constitution seriously.
That's right.
And stand up against this thuggery. And I think it would be a moral failing of this committee to not carry through where the evidence leads. And where the evidence leads is clearly to the request that the Justice Department indict Donald Trump for his crimes. The committee has already said in pleadings to the central to the district court out in California that they believe there's substantial evidence of criminal conduct by John Eastman and by Trump. They've enumerated what those potential crimes are in terms of obstructing a federal proceeding and more. And I think they have a moral obligation to tell the American people as it is, tell it like it is, and tell them that they believe there's substantial evidence of criminality that must be prosecuted. Now, it is true that that recommendation, that referral, is non-binding on the U.S. Department of Justice. It has its own independent authority to determine when and if to prosecute. I personally think that that the fact that Congress, which is this committee, which has heard from more than 550 witnesses under oath and amassed a substantial amount of testimony and evidence, should be given weight. I certainly understand that in the baseline of criminal prosecution, those prosecutors have to assess that evidence and make a determination about what charges to file. So they're not bound by it, but I don't think that means that Congress shouldn't do it. And I don't think that them doing it makes it more political or counts as caving into politics, because Congress is a body that was directly assaulted during this attack on January 6th. The violence that was targeted at the Congress is certainly as significant as when Congress is lied to by witnesses, for perjury, or when Congress is obstructed by people like Steve Bannon and others for, refusing to cooperate with subpoenas. This is surely as serious as that. In fact, I would say it's more serious than that. So it's certainly rightful, in my view, for Congress, for this committee, to make this referral. I look forward to reading it, and I look forward, hopefully, to the prosecution and convicted of every person that was centrally involved, and that includes the former guy.
Oh, I'm there with you 100%, if only. I'm of the mind, I will keep believing that these things are possible until, I'm not even going to say it. Yeah. I felt that way with the election, too, because everyone was screaming, oh, it's going to be a red wave, we're going to have all these losses, it's going to be horrible. And I said, I won't go there. I will not believe that. I won't say that. Let's wait and see the results of the election. Yeah. And look how things turned out. So,
I'm with you, Nicole, on that. The Republicans were clearly flooding the zone with these partisan polls.
Yep.
They were trying to suppress the vote by making people think it didn't matter.
That's right.
I didn't believe it at all. I didn't believe the younger people were picking up their phone to take these polls. And I knew there was a surge in registration by young people, a surge in registration by women of all ages in response to Dobbs. And I did not believe that there was going to be a red wave. I actually hope that they're personally, not organizationally, but personally, that that the Democrats would hold the Senate and expand the Senate, but at least hold the Senate and hold the House. I didn't believe that with everything we've seen and everything we've heard and everything that's happened between the Supreme Court, January 6th, the January 6th committee's hearings, and so much more, that the American people and that a majority of them would go along with these extremists that Trump was backing, and they didn't.
Right.
And I do think, like you said, you've got to remain hopeful. And why waste your time on worry?
That's right.
We have to take action to make the world a better place, and worry wastes time.
Without a doubt. And one last question. Kyrsten Sinema, what the fuck? What? She just had to play spoiler? Is that it? I mean, is there any other reason other than she's afraid of a primary challenge and she wants to become a lobbyist?
I'm really surprised by the timing that she would wait until Warnock is elected to do this. It seems a particular slap in the face, not just to Senator Warnock, but to the whole caucus, as well as all the activists across the country in Georgia and elsewhere who came out to really try to protect the country. And in fact, to try to ensure that there's subpoena power. We'll see what happens in terms of how she actually caucuses. She's not been a person of her word, in my view. And so who knows what she's actually going to do. I think it's an inherently selfish and destructive act. She would have been primaried had she remained a Democrat, you know, by party in the Senate race coming up in Arizona in a couple years. But hey, why Ben Sass and not her down there?
Right.
In Florida?
Yeah, you know, really.
Why didn't someone offer her that gig since she seems very fond of very posh handbags?
Yes.
Seems to be living, above the normal means of an ordinary person elected to Congress, although clearly there's a lot of millionaires now in Congress, more than I ever thought there would be. But I don't know why she's staying, except for to be a spoiler. I hope she doesn't behave in other destructive ways and stop the ability of the Democrats in the Senate to, do what business can be done in this divided Congress, including the confirmation of judges, but also investigations that need
That's
to happen
right.
while the House is going to be, completely out of control in its, ridiculous Benghazi type two style two version of the Hunter stuff, where clearly, they're telling the American people to worry about gas prices and worry about inflation, which, by the way, the U.S. has very little to do with.
That's right.
Sure. The U.S. is Biden's the problem why, gas prices in Belgium are so high. No, I mean, there's global
inflation. Right.
Yeah. The energy supply. But they spent all fall just and all summer hyping gas prices until they declined. Then they switched to inflation. But of course, they're not going to do a damn thing about it. They're not going to do anything about it. What they're going to do is use their power to try to destroy President Biden for the re-election for 2024, which was their whole plan before on Benghazi with Hillary, to try to destroy her, to try to prevent her from becoming president. It's all politics for them. It's millions of dollars of wasted money and effort for them. And I think the Senate needs to have the ability to counter that and have some real investigations of things that really matter to the American people. And they need to have subpoena power to do it.
Without a doubt. It's enough to make your head explode. It's a good thing that it's the weekend now. It is now officially 6:11 Friday night. I'm done. Lisa Graves, you're the best. Thank you so much. You've given us so much information today and a lot of stuff that I did not know. And I appreciate it so much. So do the listeners. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, thanks, Nicole. It's always a joy to be on your show. I really appreciate all you do to try to help make sure people understand what's going on and feel empowered to continue to stand up, speak out, speak up for our freedoms and for our democracy and not be cowed by this, by the Trump machine and by the right wing lie machine that is so, unfortunately has some quarters of power that are very influential in terms of our rights. We've got a lot to work on personally and, in other venues. And it's an honor to be on your show as always.
Well, I appreciate it more than I can express. So thank you. You're welcome here anytime. And I'm always honored to have you. All right. Have a wonderful weekend. Stay warm in Wisconsin. How cold is it there?
I'm in D.C. for this week. So
you're
it's warmer here.
You're where?
Anyway, yeah. Yeah, I'm in D.C. right now.
Oh, okay.
I'm back home later this month. So,
okay. Yeah. Well, it's a little warmer in D.C. I'm looking at it's 76 degrees here right now. So
yeah, it is not 76 degrees.
Well, anyway, stay warm wherever you are. Thank you again. You're the best. We'll talk soon. Mm-hmm. Take care. Bye. Bye-bye. Lisa Graves. Again, follow her on Twitter if she's still on Twitter, at the Lisa Graves. I don't know if she's made it over to Mastodon or somewhere else yet, but we'll find out. And do check out TrueNorthResearch.org because they're doing amazing work. Before she founded True North Research, Lisa was at the Center for Media and Democracy. And I'm telling you, that's where they did ALEC Exposed, Koch Brothers Exposed. She's the one, and her organization did all the research to tell us all about the Koch brothers and Leonard Leo. She's the reason we know who these people are. I'm sure there are others too, but I credit Lisa Graves and her organization. All right. I hope you got as much out of that as I did. We needed to know all of that. And that's why I saved it for today, because I knew Lisa would do a better job of explaining it than I ever could, because I'm just, you know, I'm a civilian like you guys. All right. With that, the weekend is here. Thank you for being here all week. Hey, one last thing. You know, with the holidays coming up, I really haven't been talking much about the pet portraits and my other artwork. But if you're looking for a great holiday gift, you know, you can get a gift certificate for somebody to work with me on their pet portrait. Because it's a very, for anybody who's had one done by me, you know, it's a collaborative process. We go back and forth. The painting's not done until you say yes. That's it. So I'm sending you pictures of the work in progress, getting your feedback so I can make it better. So if you ever want, you know, if you want that for yourself or to give a gift, I make a, put together a beautiful gift certificate. And then the person you gift it to works with me on their portrait. So just an idea. Yeah, I'm just throwing it out there. Just send me an email, Nicole@NicoleSandler.com. You can see some of them at paintyourpets.net. Okay. All right. With that, have a wonderful weekend, everybody. I'm going to leave you with the news, and I'll see you Monday. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting the show. Have a great weekend. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, it's official. Kyrsten Sinema is not a Democrat. Although that's been apparent to many of us for a while now, she made it official Friday morning, announcing that she's left the party and is now registered as an independent. Sinema has reportedly declined to say whether she'd continue to caucus with the Democrats, but she did note that she expects to keep her current committee assignments. That's a signal that she doesn't plan to disrupt the Senate composition, since Majority Leader Chuck Schumer controls the committees for the Democrats. I say the 2024 primary begins now. Bring it on, Ruben Gallego, please. Brittany Griner is back on U.S. soil. The WNBA star was flown to San Antonio after being released from Russian detention. After reuniting with her family at Kelly Field early Friday morning, she heads to Brook Army Medical Center on Fort Sam Houston for a checkup. Griner was released on Thursday in exchange for Russian arms dealer Victor Boot. Griner was arrested in February in Russia for having vape cartridges with cannabis oil in her luggage at the Moscow airport. She was sentenced to more than 9 years and had recently been moved to a Russian penal colony. Boot, nicknamed the Merchant of Death, is a former Soviet military officer who had served about half of his 25-year sentence in the U.S. for charges including conspiracy to kill Americans and providing material support to a terrorist organization. The U.S. had hoped to bring home Paul Whelan, another U.S. citizen the State Department says has been wrongfully detained in Russia, but Moscow refused to include him in the deal. Of course, lots of criticisms coming from the right, and especially the Trump family, including the orange one and his eldest spawn, who said that she hates America. Let me remind you that Paul Whelan was taken prisoner by the Russians during Trump's reign of terror. And efforts by the family to get him to do anything, even tweet about it, were ignored, just stating fact. The House on Thursday passed the Respect for Marriage Act, sending the bill to President Biden to sign into law. It codifies protections for same-sex and interracial marriages, kind of. It doesn't require all states to allow same-sex marriage, even though that is the current reality under the 2015 Obergefell versus Hodges decision. But if the Supreme Court does overturn Obergefell and previous state prohibitions on same-sex marriage came back into effect, the Respect for Marriage Act would require states and the federal government to respect marriages that were conducted in places where it's legal. That means a same-sex married couple in a red state would have to leave, go to a friendly state, get remarried, and then return to the place where they live under bigoted rule. The bill passed in the House with a vote of 258 to 169 to 1. 39 Republicans joined all the Democrats, and one Republican voted present, because courage. Yeah, it passed in the Senate, 61 to 36, with 12 Republicans joining all the Democrats to support it. The measure does repeal the 1996 Defense of Marriage Act, which recognized marriage as, quote, a legal union between one man and one woman. In Texas, A judge dismissed the first and only attempt by anyone to sue a healthcare provider for violating the state's citizen-enforced abortion ban, which outlaws aiding or abetting an abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy. The judge said he wouldn't consider the lawsuit because the person who filed it had no connection to the alleged crime, even though the law specifically encourages that kind of behavior. The law remains in effect, but reproductive right advocates are hopeful that a new precedent has been set. Well, the former guy's legal attempt to have an outside special master review the documents, including the classified ones that the FBI seized in a search of Mar-a-Lago, ended on Thursday when Trump, uncharacteristically, didn't appeal the decision dismissing the suit. The 11th U.S. Court of Appeals last week shut it down, but gave Trump until Thursday to appeal. The end of this lawsuit clears the way for the Justice Department to obtain the rest of the documents collected in the search. It's about time. A quick Florida story. A Florida Republican who sponsored the state's Don't Say Gay bill resigned a day after he was indicted on charges of defrauding the government of coronavirus relief funds. State Representative Joe Harding was charged with illegally obtaining or trying to obtain more than $150,000 in pandemic loans meant to go to small businesses during the pandemic. So I guess now we say fraud while we say gay. And finally, Representative-elect Maxwell Alejandro Frost of Florida, he's the first Gen Z member of Congress elected. He said his application to rent an apartment in Washington was rejected due to a bad credit score. He explained, quote, "I have bad credit because I ran up a lot of debt running for Congress for a year and a half. Didn't make enough money from Uber itself to pay for my living. Welcome to the real world, young man. Now go change things." I got the And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on those donate buttons.